Today's interview is with Ali Swan from Violet magazine. You know, Ali is this chick who really has a crack. She mentions in the interview a quote, and I can't quite remember what it was, but it's something along the lines of, you'll never land a shot you never take. And it really is a theme that runs throughout her entire story. She thinks, I might like to try that. And she just gives it a crack. And I find that so inspiring and so cool. So without further ado, here is Ali Swan from Violet magazine. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
Starting my story would be that I come from the UK. I've got a sister and I loved school, loved sport, had my horses, used to go hunting, and, you know, life was absolutely perfect in my eyes, you know. And then my sister was involved in a car accident. Actually, somebody knocked her over while she was crossing the road. So she was in a coma for 3 months and nearly died, I don't know how many times, woke up a different person, and the parents decided that, I know, we'll go and emigrate to Australia. Is it immigrate or emigrate?
I always stuff up.
So I just said that. So if somebody calls me on it, sorry. Anyway, so, you know, they decided that because the specialist said she's got so many broken bones and everything, you really ought to go somewhere where it's warm. Now, I would have thought, in my adult way here, that we could have just got a place in Spain perhaps, but no, on the other side of the world. And see, for my father, who was a professional footballer and who had travelled the world, it was nothing to him, and off we came. So we left everybody we knew and all family. Yippee! Quite daunting, as you can imagine. So I'd gone from before I was 14 and a half, so it was that age that, like, I'd done 13 mock O-levels, got 12 A's and a B by one point, and didn't know what I was going to do, but I thought, oh, I'll just study forever sort of thing and keep doing the sport and the horses, and that's it, you know. So came to Australia and hit the school here, hated it, learnt nothing. It was so different. I mean, you know, I was one of those children, if you said jump, I'd say how high, and off you go, you know. That's the eldest, expectations, blah, 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 all that sort of thing. Failed school on one level. I had 13 O-levels, potentially at 14 instead of 16. I could have done anything. Sport-wise, I was asked to be part of an Olympic sports team, training, blah, blah. Lots going on, lots going good. Came here and everything went backwards because, I don't know, I just couldn't make decisions for myself because I'd never really had to. You know, everything was just swimmingly, and then you go somewhere, and I'll always remember sitting in the mall thinking, I don't know a single soul that's going to walk past me here, whereas we'd come from a village where everybody knows everybody. And, in fact, when I went back for a funeral, I was walking down the main street and somebody said, oh, my gosh, I haven't seen you for such a long time. I thought, yes, 20 years. That's quite some time. It's amazing you could actually even recognize me. But anyway, I moved along and was really quite aimless, didn't really have huge amounts of direction. And, of course, Lisa was not that well and she had a close head injury, so she was different forever. You know, my mother wouldn't accept it. My father and I were the ones that were sort of doing a lot of looking after and getting her out of trouble and all that sort of thing, because that's what you do. Yeah, so I started working and, like, in the Barsmith Library, because I've always loved books. I'm a prolific reader. I thought, I can't stand this. I should be on the other side of the desk. So I decided to go for a mature age entry into teaching. So I got into that whilst I was working, and about 6 months, no, it was 2 years into it, some of the lecturers said, you're really doing well, but perhaps you should choose to do something else. And I'm like, I was horrified. I was like, why? Because, you know, the first papers I got back, I had a D on it, and I thought I'd failed.
It was a distinction.
I'm like, oh, my God, am I that useless sort of thing? You know, and he's like looking at me going, what? And we had a family business. My husband and I had a business at the time, and I was just so – I was doing so many hours, it wasn't funny. And then he fell ill, so I deferred, which meant really who knows what was going to happen to that, because I'd do stuff the night before and it would come up okay. And I think, you know, I'm really not putting enough into this, like personally. Suffice to say, fell pregnant after having loads and loads of trouble with that side of things, multiple miscarriages and things. So I decided that after Jack was about three, I thought, what would be one of the hardest things to do for me? And that would be asking for money. I don't like asking for money. And I still really think that that has held me back to a bit of a degree. But I thought, I can work on weekends. I have to really ask for the sale. New homes. Went in to do new homes. Had an absolute ball and sold all this stuff. And I'm thinking, I really don't know how I'm doing this, but it's working. So, and then I thought, oh, well, I've done that now. What can I do now? I thought, I've always had this huge interest in science, so perhaps I'll do pharmaceutical sales. So I went to the agencies and said, you know, what do you have to do? What qualifications do you need? And they just looked, took one look at me and went, you'll never get in to do pharmaceuticals. And I'm like, why? And they're there, oh, well, you know, you need a science degree minimum, you need this, 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 and this. And I'm like, okay, no problem. So I left there and I just thought, what a load of toss. And I found a friend who I knew had been in the industry, went over there with a bottle of red wine, said, right, I'm going to go for this job at Roche. And at the time, Roche was like one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies. And she said to me, you know what, I'd love to work at Roche. I said, why don't you go for jobs there then? She goes, oh, no. And it turned out that afterwards she said, oh, and she was a science student. She'd written papers. She was really up there. And I thought, why wouldn't she go to do it? Anyway, I said, I've got this presentation I have to do. And she goes, oh, what is it? And I get this big envelope out and I'm like, it's about half a dozen papers that they had sent me. And they said, okay, we want you to do a presentation on this drug that actually didn't get to market, but we'd obviously spent, you know, millions of dollars in R&D and we'd like to see how you present. Oh, my giddy aunt. I'm like, I think I might need two bottles of wine, but we've got one for the moment. I'm like, what the hell? I don't even understand this stuff. But because I love research and I'm just so curious. It's like curious and curiouser. And I'm like, right, let's do this. And by the end of the afternoon, she was so kind to me, Anna. She explained what Pac-Man were and she explained what all these other drugs were. And I went off and did a whole heap of research. And I swear, honest, you think I knew exactly what I was talking about. I managed to find this pen that was in the shape of bone, a bone, you know, literally an arm bone or something. And so I used that as a giveaway. And they're like, oh, we really love this. I was absolutely petrified. I had to just go to the airport and do it in one of those little airport rooms, you know. I've never had any background in it. So I did it and I thought, you know what, that was such a big experience that I think it would hold me in good stead for anything else that comes along. Anyway, I got a call. Yeah, we'd love to offer you a position. I'm like, oh, my God. So now I had to go to Manly for 6 weeks for training because Roche was so big on their training. Like, you just had to get 100% on everything pretty much, especially product information, which is important. But I'm like, oh, I'm with all these other people that are so, you know, geared up and everything else. And so you try so much harder because you think you're going to fall short. Not realizing that it's not just this science little bit of background you've got to have. It's about interpersonal skills and chatting to people and finding out what they need and elucidating information that's complex into a really simple sort of format when you're talking with doctors and stuff like that. So I got through it. And I remember Jack was only young and ringing home and saying, I really need to speak to Jack. And I hear this little voice say, can you tell Mummy that I'm a bit busy right now? And I thought, yeah, okay, he's all good. Time for me to be all good. And I remember girls turning up with like 7 suit bags because they'd have, you know, 7 suits, one for each training. And then we'd leave crazy on a Friday night to try and get the planes back, go home, wash everything, say hello. And then on Sunday we were back on a plane to go back out to do another week. So, and some people fell by the wayside, but it was such, you'd stay up till 2 o'clock because you'd finish a whole day training. Then you'd have to go and prepare something either in a group or individually. And then you'd have to present the next day, then followed by exams and stuff. And knock, 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 knock. And it's like, you know, 11:30 at night. And you open the door. Yes. And he's going, I just don't get it. I just don't get it. And we're like, come in. And there's be a few of us and we just get everybody through, you know. And it was just that whole team thing. And we wanted to make sure that everybody got through and got through well, and then you'd be able to get out and get into your territory and start your work in that industry. That went along for quite a while in Adelaide because it's so small compared to other states in terms of managers and positions. You have to change companies to be able to go up the food chain. And, you know, people would rather die here than give up their manager's jobs. I was very fortunate. I was able to negotiate different packages, much bigger packages, bigger positions. Really loved it. People would say to me, you chat to everyone. Everybody chats to you. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, oh, how do you get in to see them? I'm like, well, I just ask. And, you know, and people would say, but you talk to the cleaners. I'm like, yeah. If I'm waiting, I'm going to talk to anybody if they come by or they say hello. And, you know, and educating people, because I always did selling through the education. I wasn't into like sales per se. I'd often say to specialists, if you don't have this group of patients that this can help, don't worry about it, you know. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your son who just went skiing in Aspen, you know. And because of that, I guess, and the fact that they knew I was totally trustworthy, it worked well, even though the companies would have an absolute fit if they'd known. But, you know, it's about people.
Yeah, it is.
So it's not about profits per se. They come. That comes. It comes with it. But if you concentrate on the people, and that's what I used to do, and for that you invest yourself in their outcomes and them getting well or them moving on to a different trial or, you know, somebody living for longer when they've, you know, you're working with oncology. And when I worked with palliative care, it was for children and adults. You know, if you get up in the morning, it's a good day. When you've worked around palliative care and, you know, Ronald McDonald House and things like that, it's quite different. So after quite a few years of that, I was a bit burnt out. And decided that, yeah, I'd do some more study. So did some marketing business at uni. Then I have 2 more boys. So when the 2 little boys were there, I thought, oh, what can I do? What can I do? Got shortlisted for a few farmer jobs. And then I thought, I know in my heart that I'm not going to want to do a little part-time job. It just didn't seem to work out. So I thought I'll do some temping, something I can just do with So I tried that and that was interesting. So by about 11 o'clock in the morning, I was like done with all the work they had. I'd tidied up the desk. I'd done this, that and the other. So then people were getting really pissed off and it was like, can you please slow down? You're making us look bad. And then I'd get asked to write a complete strategy for a council for economic development or something, and I'm there supposed to be and getting paid, what's more, as a very low-level temping person. As much as I tried, that didn't work out either because, you know, you alienate the people around you and they feel pressured by it. Even though I was really trying hard to be dumb and really trying hard to just do what they asked. It was just stressful. I thought, oh, I've got to go back to uni. What am I going to do? And I thought, oh, I know, I'll put law down. Because biotechnology was really part of what I love, and the whole mystery of it all, I thought, okay, well, I'll do law and biotech, thinking that I'd never get into law. And then the results came out and I got my offer of law. And I thought, wow, oh my God, now I've got to go and do it. I was quite chuffed. And even to this day, I think, how did I do that? But it was great. I met loads of really fabulous people. The words thing came in again. And then, you know, you realize that you're not some young person that can boss around. And traditionally in the law firms, when you've had management experience, they would then find you very challenging to manage themselves because they're not, you know, you want some sort of respect, the fact that you've had a life before you've gone there. And initially I only wanted to do that because I wanted to be a voice for people like my sister and people that society tends to take advantage of. Why? Because they can. You know, they get treated really badly in lots of ways, and a lot of them end up being homeless, and a lot of them end up, you know, they've got big mental health issues that can develop over time when you've got closed head injuries. So then that's a new frontier, and it's just really, really hard. It's hard for, super hard for them, but really hard for family. Yeah, then my parents passed away fairly quickly, so there was just me left to look after Lisa as well. And I thought, I've got two children. I've got my sister, and I'm the one that sort of is able to do the talking with the health professionals and things like that, which fortunately for her, because if she didn't have me, it would have just been horrible. I mean, I've seen how they treat people. They're human beings. They're not useless. They don't understand a lot of things and they don't think like you and I perhaps, but at the end of the day, brain injuries are something of themselves. It's like somebody getting a brain tumor and losing function in the frontal lobe. There's lots of reasons why people can develop mental health issues and have disabilities. So, and I was really big on that because with the teaching, I used to do special education. So having, you know, got a gifted and dyslexic child and another gifted child, helping those that are really challenged is as great as helping those to develop themselves. With my life experiences, found it fairly easy to get people to speak to me and to divulge things so I could help them. So they could, if I couldn't help them, I could put them onto somebody else who can. So it was always a connecting type role that I'd played. For that reason, that's what I knew I really liked. So then I'm like, what am I going to do? I'm multi-passionate. I do not want to just do one thing. I do not want to be stuck doing one thing. And so I came up with Violet. I thought I'd really wanted to platform other women that perhaps didn't have a voice because they weren't considered large enough, big enough, have a big enough list. How many listeners do you have? How many readerships do you have? How many subscriptions do you have? I was just really sick of hearing that. And I knew that there are lots of really, really interesting, inspiring, energetic, you know, women that can just change so much and help other people. And so I thought that might be a nice platform. I got a graphic designer involved initially and started to put things in place. And then 2 weeks before it was due out to launch, she disappeared and I had no graphic design experience behind me at all. So from that point on, I felt sick every day and I lived on lynda.com. You know, in the past before getting a graphic designer, I didn't know that much about it. It wasn't my area of expertise, although I know I've always loved colour, I know I've always loved design, words, all of that sort of thing. And, you know, it turns out I have a bit of an eye for it. So, you know, because my life had always been making money, doing budgets, managing multi-million dollar deals, all those sorts of things, and people. So I didn't have time for the creative side.
Yeah.
You know, people have said to me, why didn't you just go and employ somebody else? Well, that would have been good if I hadn't spent nearly all my money on this one person beforehand and tried a couple of times before that with other people that I, because of my me not knowing much, I just got totally ripped off. Therein lies big stories and you know, the experience and the way that you're going to change things. I learned to do it myself. I thought I can rely on myself. And I'm happy to own mistakes. I'm happy to own, you know, if things don't go well, because at the end of the day, this is a vehicle. That's how I want it to be. It's for reaching people. And now I've pretty much got a good bedrock, you know. I've met lots of fantastic people. There's been lots of learning.
Yeah.
And so much, I can't believe it. They're not failures. I don't see things as failures. I really don't. You know, there's times where I can go, oh, I could have done that better if I'd known X, Y, Z. But at the end of the day, I didn't. And yeah. At that moment, that is my best. And there it is. I've had fantastic feedback and it continues to grow. And now I'm sort of getting off on a little bit more of another direction. It took me all that time to build the apps. Because it's a magazine app, it's different to just having a PDF. And this year now, it's marketing time, because there's me and me and me.
Yeah.
Oh, and me.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a few other, you know.
A few other yous too.
Yeah. And times they're nice and yeah. Sometimes
not so nice. Yeah. I hear you. You know, there's a few little things that I picked up on during your story. And firstly, I have to say, like, I love that you are interested in getting the stories out of people who don't necessarily have big followings, because that's exactly the same reason that I started this podcast. You know, everybody has a really interesting story, but most people don't get the platform to share it, you know. And so I wanted to be the platform that shows that it doesn't matter whether you are, you know, highly successful and wealthy, or, you know, in your first year of business, you still are equally as important as a person on the planet, you know, and your story is equally important. So that's kind of why I started this podcast. And I love that, yeah, that there's that kind of marriage there. And the other things that I picked up on your story was, like, you totally seem to be able to power through imposter syndrome. Like, how do you manage to do that? It's like you go, oh, that would be really cool. I'm just going to put myself up for it. And then, you know, it's like you're a shapeshifter or something, and you can magically kind of.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate in that sense. I don't know. I think initially when I was younger, I'd sort of think, oh, I don't see any reason why I can't do that. Deep down, I know I felt like, oh, my God, what am I doing? You know, can I really do that? But you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think through adversity, you've got to have that sense of self. I think that's perhaps where it's come by. And I value everybody that I come across. And, you know, like, I don't think my story is very interesting. That was what I was stuck on. I thought, oh, everybody's saying their stories and this, that, and the other. And I think, what would I include, or what might be interesting for people to learn about me? And I was really stuck on that. So I apologize for the jabbering on for so long. But, you know, it's like, oh, well.
It's your story. It's all relevant. You know, I noticed that you're just like a lifelong learner.
Yes, my hex fees are horrendous. I've got them to prove it. I am a lifelong learner, and I used to think that was a bit of a drag. Well, I didn't think it. A lot of other people had made comment, and not always in a positive light. And then I thought, oh, is that really odd? But I don't care, really. I love learning. It's part of who I am, and I think I feel better within myself when I am. And, you know, because I get bored very quickly, I don't know, I think it's just a bit more interesting. I must say, I have felt quite alienated up until the last 4 or 5 months whilst putting the apps together. It was quite lonely. I actually had this, like, self-imposed, I've got to sit here and just do it. I've got to get it done. I just want to get through it, get it sorted. Oh, so what if I don't understand it? I just Google it. I just do it. I just ring somebody I knew, or put it out there to the B-School group, or yeah, whoever, you know, all of our different forums that we belong to, with fabulous women And you know the ones who are happy to share. You're not going to take advantage of them.
Yeah.
You know, you've got ethics yourself. You know that the tide will turn and what you give out, you know, hopefully comes back to you. And I'm always happy to assist. I've been taken advantage of a few times. Now I'm a bit wiser. I think when people know me or know of me, they know that, you know, I'm not going to waste their time or take ages to do something because, hey, we're all busy. We've all got lots to do. We've all got more in our lives than just our business. We may have family. We may have, you know, some passion that we follow outside of what we do if we're not fortunate enough to be working in a passion. I find it just interesting. Otherwise, I find it very boring. I find myself becoming boring.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't realize, it seems so ridiculous, but I didn't realize that I used to see and speak to so many people all the time because deep down I'm quite introverted. And all of the psych stuff that you used to do, because in pharma they used to do heaps of all that. I remember one time we were away for a weekend and doing team building stuff. This guy said to me, oh, could you take me to the airport after? And like he was employed by the company to come in and do a whole load of assessments and stuff to work out where people might be better off positioned, rah-de-rah. Anyway, I said, yeah, sure. I got in the car. I think, you know, it was about an hour and a half's drive to the airport from where we were. We went in the car more than 5 minutes and he said, you're really unusual. And I'm like, I hope you mean unusual good, because like it's a long walk to the airport.
yeah, buddy.
yeah. And he goes, no, I've never seen anything like it. I'm like, you're making me feel really anxious. What are you talking about? He goes, you could do anything, be anywhere. He said, you're an introverted extrovert. And I'm like, oh, good. And I said, look, I can perform when I have to. I can stand on a stage and I can address people, but I'd much rather sit back and just watch others interact, and I find that much more curious nature, and I can lead and I can follow. And there's not a lot of people actually that seem to be able to do both.
Yeah.
To be happy to do both perhaps. But yeah, it used to make me feel really uncomfortable about that. Too much time on my own is sometimes not that good.
Yeah, no, it's not that good. No.
It's really hard when you can't actually put a sentence together when you know, in the past I've been very capable of doing that. And then you find yourself going, ugh.
I know. I just suffered depression and anxiety in the past. And I remember when I moved to Nambucca Heads on the mid-north coast, I was very, very isolated. I knew nobody. And I kind of lost, like, I mean, I talk for a living. I talk into a microphone. But I lost the ability. It was kind of like there's that movie with, is it, Tom Hanks, and he's talking to like a football. He's on a like deserted island and he's talking to a football that has a name. Well, that's what I kind of felt like. Like, I mean, I had my husband there, so I wasn't like totally alone, but I became socially awkward. I'd never been like that before. I went from being definitely extroverted to being introverted, I think due to social anxiety, well, due to anxiety in general. And so it really changed the way I functioned with people and I just couldn't connect. And it was really, really
scary.
Hideous. Yeah. And I was going to say, like on that, you know, working for a large pharma, when I was working in sales, we used to have conferences and we'd do disc profiling and all that kind of jazz, the fun stuff. And I remember doing one where, you know, there was this thing where we had to like say what we would do in this situation and this situation. Mm-hmm. And they mapped it out and it would say that in a work situation, you are this type of person. And in your personal life, you are this type of person. Mm-hmm. And then they got to me and they were like, we've never seen this before, but you are the same person regardless of what you're doing. So you're inappropriate in real life and you're inappropriate in work life. You know, he was like, we've never seen a profile that has had that person be exactly the same no matter where you put them. And yeah, it was really, you know, and I think about it because I am like I think I just bring me to everything. And I try to do that really as authentically as I can, but I don't know how to be anyone else. So
that's it. And when people started using the word, you know, want to be authentic and this, that, and they're like, what the? you know, like, I know it's a word to sort of it's describe it, but yeah. How else would you be presenting yourself? And on that end, I think that is quite naive, you know, of me in one sense. But in another, it's that no-nonsense part of me that just goes, oh, you know, you are who you are, for goodness sake. You know, you can put a different mask on if you want, but your delivery can be quite different. But intrinsically, you are who you are. And, you know, chameleon, not chameleon, whatever.
Yeah. I think the authenticity thing comes down to being aligned with who you are and what you're good at and bringing those two kind of things together. Mm. And for me anyway, I see authenticity when it comes to a work sense is really bringing you and not really thinking about the shoulds, you know, like I should put on makeup before I jump on a call. I should do this. I should present myself in a different way. I should, you know, and so authenticity comes when you really know yourself better, I think, you know.
I think so too. Maybe it's a heightened awareness of yourself.
Yeah.
Because I put out, you know, occasionally you put out things to other people and say, what do you think my best qualities are, or what is it that you like about me? As you scared to death to send it out, you hit the go button and you go, oh my God. And then it comes back and you go, really? You go, oh. And, you know, you have these really nice things said about you. And I found that quite hard because I found that I was always the giver. I was the one encouraging, and that's just part of me. And so I didn't think about me from a different light. And so this whole journey with Violet and being involved with the B School has been such a personal development area.
Yeah.
And when I got a bit bored with, well, law is very dry. So I did a postgrad in neuroscience.
Jesus.
And it, yeah, well, look at this. I went to do my first essay and I'm like, oh my God, I've forgotten how to write. Because everything was in like legalese. I'm like, oh, jeez, you know, how am I going to do this? I used to be able to write a bloody essay and now I'm floundering. Anyway, got over that. But, yeah, it was about how people learn and how the brain functions and works, which was quite interesting anyway because of my sister. But also, you know, about focus and how to do that and how to be really productive, because I don't really like wasting time. I can't be bothered. I'd rather then have a cup of tea with a friend or sit and have a drink with a girl and girls have a laugh, you know. Spent way too much time working in the last couple of years and not enough time enjoying it or even thinking about the outcomes. And I guess I've been forced to in a way, which has been very hard for me, I've found. Not really sure why. I guess it'll illuminate one day, but which has led to me wanting to do some different things so that I can actually really monetize what I've been doing and, as I said, to do more marketing for the area that I'd like to expand into. I'll always have this platform for anyone who has something useful to say or to contribute to, I guess, predominantly females or women in business, but I do have quite a high male readership, which surprised me initially. I don't think it's just because of the pretty patterns on the paper, you know, on the background. No. I think it has to be the content.
Yeah, and I think I have been open to interviewing men on my show, but I haven't yet. But what I have realized is, you know, I've got a few more male entrepreneurs in my life these days. Since I opened my co-working space, I connected with met a few over the years. And what I've noticed is there's like a kind of coming together now where it doesn't, I don't know, it's really hard to explain, but we're all talking the same language.
Well, that's it. And so that's why I've sort of done a bit of a subtle change in the sense that instead of having, you know, just for female entrepreneurs and women in business, I've got entrepreneurs and women in business, because I've always worked with men. I work really well with men. I like the no-nonsense, I don't know, just the way they think differently, because I can think like that as well. So it's quite comfortable for me. So in that sense, I just think that everybody has a lot to offer and I can learn so much from them as well. So I'm being, you know, I'm being a bit selfish as well. It's good. The more, the merrier. But, you know, you've still got to earn X amount to be able to do it and all that sort of stuff as well.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch. Biggest fear?
This podcast with you.
Am I that scary?
No, it was coming from me.
Yeah.
No, really. Biggest fear. I don't have the big fears. I guess a concern would be that perhaps I don't hit the mark for the people, you know, meet their expectations, or it's not workload, it's not getting around things, or sorry, that wasn't very good, was it? Biggest fear, finding something for dinner.
That is one of mine. That's cool. It is what it is. That is what it is.
Yeah.
So biggest struggle, what do you struggle with at the moment?
Yeah, definitely putting myself out there. That's something I really have to work on, because I really enjoy face-to-face, and that's my best. You know, I've always done it, so building rapport has always been pretty, you know, quick and easy and fun. So having been at home and having been stuck in front of a computer for a lot of the time, I found I'm not really as articulate as I used to be. And I've struggled finding words, even chatting to you, I've noticed.
Yeah, it hasn't come across.
Nice words.
You can say whatever your words you like, because this is a safe space.
Yeah, it's definitely putting myself out there and promoting me.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, congratulations on busting through that today.
Thanks.
What have been your biggest lessons?
There's definitely more than one way to skin a cat. And it's just about sometimes stepping back and not, you know, because when you're starting something or there's just you, you're working in it, not on it. So, I mean, even though intellectually you know that, sometimes you just cannot get out of it enough to be able to sit back and go, right, my next step is going to be X, Y, and Z because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. And breaking things down into more manageable chunks when you've got, you know, a big picture. I'm fortunate and unfortunate in the sense that I can do big picture and very micro, you know, so macro within the micro, and sometimes that can actually be a pain in the neck. Recently I had to really step back because I was past, you know, pussy's bow, and sort of make a few decisions about pushing myself forward to do a few things.
Yeah, I hear you on the big picture, little picture stuff, because I'm the same. I can go big and then I can go into minute detail, and then sometimes that just becomes too overwhelming for me, because I know all the little things that I need to do in very fine detail to have that big picture, and then I'm just like, holy shit, this is too big. I used to ask, what have you failed at? But I find that people frame failure very differently. So now I instead ask, what is failure to you? What does it look like? How does it feel? And kind of how does it show up in your life?
Honestly, I don't think about things in a success or a failure either or situation. Now, if I was to do a paper and it got a, you know, I haven't had a paper with a fail on it, but if I had, then that would clearly mean I've missed the mark with what it was that I was supposed to do. So like anything I do, some things you're going to do better than others. Personally, I might say I didn't do that very well, but I would never say I failed at that, because I think if anyone attempts something and goes through the process, then, you know, it might not come out the way you anticipate it's going to, but that doesn't mean to say that you completely failed it either. I know that doesn't really answer your question.
No, but it does. And I just had a realization while I was talking to you then, because I think as a person, as a human being, you can't really fail, but you can have things around you fail. So because you are not your business, and, you know, your business is something separate to yourself, even if you are the brand, and I think it's really important to have that distinction. It could fail, but you as a person don't fail.
No, and I think there's so much of that tying up. It's like people will say, oh, what do you do for a living? Or, you know, even now still people say that in conversations along
like
the way.
Like it's who are you? You
know? Who are you? And you'll say, oh, what have you studied or whatever. That that doesn't mean anything. It's, you know, who are you from my perspective is, you know, what do you like? What's your output in life in general? It doesn't mean that you are something because you've attained X, Y, and Z. So yeah. I don't look at stuff like that. I am very sensitive though. I do take things personally, but I've learned over a period of time that I know the distinction is there between if you were the brand and that brand didn't go well, that it's not actually you.
Yeah.
It's a set of skills that you've put together that didn't hit the mark, or you need to have some added assistance from somebody who's further down the track and literally just knows more than you do and has a wealth of information about how, or a couple of opportunities for you to pursue to be able to get from A to B as quickly as you can, say. When you choose a path, there is nothing to say you have to stay on that path. You can go A or B, you know, left or right. If it doesn't turn out the way you'd like it to, or you've changed your mind, you know, we all change our mind. It's like sometimes people say, oh, well, if I don't finish that, I've failed. And I myself have not finished some things that I've chosen to do. And I've had one or two that I've felt a little bit of regret for not doing it. But at the time, there were circumstances for me not doing it. And I guess that's just life. Whilst I can be disappointed that the opportunity didn't present or wasn't there for long enough for me to complete something, then, you know.
And it's still no reason not to start.
Yeah, yeah. And people say, I hear it all the time, you know, fear of failure. But as you said, it's how we interpret failure.
Yeah.
What our marks are for failure for us. It's like, you know, with my little boys, you don't fail at anything.
No, you know, that's right.
You don't fail at anything. The only thing you fail at is if you really want to do something and you don't ever start it, you don't try.
That's right.
Because it's like that funny old saying I think I had 1,000 years ago was, you'll miss all the shots that you don't take or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's true. When opportunity knocks, see you answer. It's like, could just go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it. And if you don't like it, that's okay. You just go and do something else. You may find that you really love it and you may find that you enjoy it beyond belief. But, you know, you and I could do the same thing and I would take out different things to you. We may well have some things in common, but no doubt there would be stuff that I hadn't thought of and stuff that you hadn't thought of. And that's the beauty of it. It's like a salad bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, my husband always says to me, God, you're a curious being. I'm like, yeah, it's not that I want to know people's business. I'm just curious. Curious as to why something will, I mean, it drives me mad in my children. So now I know what he's up against. But, you know, how does that work? Why does this happen? Why does that happen? And all you want to say is it bedtime yet? I love you so much when you're asleep. You know?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess it's how we couch failure, isn't it? It's definitely how we couch it.
Yeah, for sure. So we generally all have a voice in our head that, you know, isn't that nice to us. What does your, you know, negative self-talk kind of say over and over?
This just happened in the last couple of days. I decided that I wanted to get somebody who is very large in the online world on to Violet, and it did cross my mind that perhaps they wouldn't want to because the numbers wouldn't be what they wanted, because this is what I've heard from so many people. You know, an email came back saying, oh, I'm absolutely really wrapped and thank you so much for offering and blah, 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 blah. But can you tell me a bit more about the readership? And I'd already detailed that. So really the question was, what's your numbers? Okay. It wasn't that I wasn't divulging it, but I gave her some stats because I tend to like those as well. And I just said, so there you have it. And if you choose not to go ahead, I totally understand. That's fine. And then I thought, okay, well, because I work so far in advance, I've got to get someone else teed up if they're not sure or whatever. So, you know, I was just thinking out loud, la, la, la. It comes back like, I get a lot of emails and, you know, it wasn't quite so so speedy. And it's like, I don't actually care about that. I just wanted to know whether you're in or you're out, you know, just so I can find someone else if you're not. And that's no hard feeling. Well, you know, came across that, yes, they really wanted to still be, but there was that little bit of uncertainty, you know, because you can't give a hard, cold fact on the stuff that I do. To that end, I felt like saying, why don't you just ask me the question? What are your numbers? Because I have a criteria. Because then that way I wouldn't waste my time or your time if I don't have those numbers, and that's what you have your criteria by.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's where my no-nonsense comes in. You know, and yet I have had people like, say, Nikki Ellidge-Brown, who was on her first launch, and she and I had some technical issues. We tried to do our interview 3 times. It was so lovely working with her because it's very professional either way. There's no blaming, no, you know, I'm so important. She was the one, interestingly enough, that promoted the most out of everybody on that issue, and yet she was up to her neck in launching her first program.
Yeah.
You know, and it just goes to show you that, again, it's that communication and what people decide to take on and what they don't. And, you know, those that are well-meaning against those that are well-meaning under the pump, but they'll still do it.
Yeah. Career highlight.
Well, I guess seeing it up there in newsstand and having people, you know, email me from Europe. I get a lot of people from Europe asking if they can put their photography into Violet and designers. And, you know, I've even got some emails that people are just sending that are so lovely and they're not asking me for anything, which I think is a bit of a highlight. I think because it was such a hard slog. I mean, I didn't have any training in anything like this and knew nothing about it, nothing at all. And I know it's not perfect, but I wasn't looking for perfection. I was looking to get it out there. And I still maintain that, you know, it's as perfect as I can get it at the time I spend on it. And I'm learning as I go along. But, yeah, that would have to be a bit of a highlight, seeing it there and having people from the other side of the world, you know, message me and thank me for something that's gone in there. It's a bit of a kick, yeah.
Do you have any kind of, like, self-love routine or a way that you, you know, look after yourself?
I looked at that and started laughing. Because that I have been doing a really miserable job with lately. The answer to that essentially is no. The answer to that is I'm working on it and it is becoming more of a priority because it's been crap lately. Yeah, and it's just not healthy, you know.
Yeah.
I've just been work, home, husband, family, you know, boys, running around. And I've done it to myself. That's the crazy thing. You know, it's like I've got out of the habit of having a bit of nice me time or doing the gym thing or, you know, and yet I used to live my life religiously like that and I was far more productive and I think probably nicer, definitely nicer to myself. Yeah. Why do we do that?
I've got some theories on that.
I kind of
feel like it's a thing. I don't know if it's just women who do this, but you know, I was watching this video that actually Denise Duffield Thomas had posted on her Facebook page, and it was her talking about the way women are advertised to, as opposed to the way men are advertised to, and what is luxury. You know, how is luxury perceived towards women? And it's like, you know, a body wash or a cake of soap or some nice dishwashing liquid or an air freshener. And for men, it's like, you know, the Rolex and the Ferrari and the speedboat and the motorcycle. So it's like women have this thing where we have a legacy too of not being, you know, of the man providing for us. And then we have this constant reinforcing that we're not really all that worthy or deserving of anything of substantial value. You know, and so I think that kind of reinforces something deep inside us where perhaps we don't feel worthy of looking after ourselves. I don't know. Anyway, it's definitely something about self-worth, Because if we really felt worthy, we would do the things that made us feel good.
And I think, you know, I mean, I'm talking in terms of just the hours I put in, which means that I'm limited, you know, to what I can do. And at no point have I thought I'm not worthy. And at no point have I verbalized it. But I do think perhaps for me it has something to do with, you know, like your income. Like I've always been on really decent money, like yourself probably. And then you start something for yourself with nothing to begin with, you know. And I think I have this little curious thinking that it's to do with that, because I found that if you don't have a fair amount of disposable income to put back into your business as well, you have income, it runs your business, basically runs your business and things to do with the children, yeah, then I come last, it seems.
Yeah.
But it's not consciously.
No, it's absolutely not consciously. It's not, because I mean, I know that I'm deserving.
Yeah, you know, I do too.
But there's definitely something going on, particularly I see with women a lot of the time, and in their businesses and in their lives, they put everyone else before them. They put their kids before them. They put their husband's needs before them. They even put their clients' needs before them, and eventually all the money's coming into the business and it's going out to other people. And nothing's left for themselves. And that definitely is something I'm really interested in exploring further, why women tend to do that. And, yeah, I think it's kind of it's got to be something really deep. Mm. But I have this, I just have this theory that it's about self-worth in some way. Mm. So,
I think it could be on the money there, on the money.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
So Violet Magazine is available on the Apple Newsstand and the Google Play Store, and also on the website that I've got. So that's violet-magazine.com, and also on Facebook and Twitter. And that's it.
The takeaway. Exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
You can definitely do whatever it is that you put your mind to, regardless of skill set. Seriously, just have a go, because I had put so much. I'm not a graphic designer. I feel like I am now, though, to a degree. Out of chaos comes something really fun, and I love it. So
throw yourself in there,
roll around, get dirty, stand up again, do it again if you have to. It's all good.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.